Well, hello and welcome back. We're on for another episode of the StoneX Australian Cattle and Beef Market Report. My name is Ripley Atkinson. I'm the Australian Livestock and Commodities Manager for StoneX based in Sydney, where we're developing price risk management tools for the Australian beef industry to help the sector manage price and market volatility with our Australian feeder cattle swap. We're brought to you by StoneX Group, a NASDAQ-listed global financial services network with 100 years of experience in global commodity markets. Remember that the trading of derivatives such as futures, options, and over-the-counter products or swaps may not be suitable for all investors. Derivative trading involves substantial risk of loss, and you should fully understand the risks prior to trading. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future results. There's been plenty happening of late, particularly with some of the recent or key data releases coming out in the last sort of 10 days or so and in the local markets themselves. We'll have a look at both of those today. But to get started, I thought it'd be best to start with what's happening in the current marketplace. Looking at the restockers to kick off, I think there's a few things here at the minute combining or aligning at the same time to really support and drive how this restocker market's performed. Spring for a lot of people is now weeks away. You know, we're looking at a period of dry weather for the next sort of 2 to 3 weeks until mid-September for a lot of places. And I think that aspect of a bit of warm weather alongside some dry weather will be appreciated by a lot of people. The timing of the rain, particularly, you know, in those regions, sort of northern New South Wales, Queensland, and the rain they've received over the last, you know, fortnight to 3 weeks, I think has been really influential. Just coming at the right time prior to spring really kicking into gear. And I think the other aspect, you know, to that is some grass growth and production starting to increase. Those factors collectively, you know, are really supportive of where this restocker market is at. I think the second thing to add to that would certainly be producers are looking at current feeder prices, you know, black feeders, Angus feeders at $5.30, British cross cattle at sort of $4.80 to $5, and crossbreds at, you know, $4.50 to $4.70. That feeder price or the sell price to the producer is incentivizing them or giving them that false sense of security to jump in and pay up for light cattle. And I think that's another factor which is sort of spurring on the producer to get access to stock because they're seeing the end price so strong. But looking at a regional base, I think, you know, we've spoken a lot on the podcast this year about the strength of, you know, the Queensland and northern New South Wales demand in the southern markets at the start of the year. We're beginning to see the reverse of that play out. You know, if you look at Victorian store sales at the minute, you know, your average for a black feeder, a black restocker steer might be closer to $5.50. For the same type of article in a fat market in northern New South Wales out of the yards, you're looking closer to $5. So even with the freight differential, you are starting to see increasing numbers of those southern producers reach into northern markets chasing lighter cattle to help with the rebuild, or at least, you know, purchase at a lighter cents a kilo rate. And the cost of them to get them home would still be less than what it costs to operate in the local markets. So I think that's another aspect to consider. And the dearer you see cattle get in those local markets in the south, the more you're going to see that pull of southern producers in northern markets, simply the opposite of what we've seen earlier this year. Moving past the restocker space, the feeders I mentioned, you know, feeder prices themselves are incentivizing, or spot feeder prices that is, incentivizing the restocker to step into the market quite hard under the assumption you're going to see the same rate for a feeder steer in 6 months' time when that trade ends. I think there's a few factors at the minute to the actual feeder steer market and how it's performing. The same can be said about heifers. Heifers are in a really healthy spot at the minute, and the demand for feeder heifers is very strong. But generally at a feedlot level, I don't think it can be underestimated the influence of the South this year in the feeder market. Obviously the expansion, which I'll touch on a bit later, of feedlots in general over the last, you know, 5 to 7 years has been astronomical. Most of it focused around northern New South Wales and Queensland, but, you know, there has been some big expansion in southern feedlots, and the reach of those southern feeders, you know, well into central Queensland to purchase and truck home has been massive. And it's been a real underlying contributor to why we're seeing the feeder price generally so strong this year. Talking on those southerners and, you know, talking about their reach, there's evidence and examples of trades being done for cattle, you know, delivered Blackall, Waden delivered Blackall, Winton, Tambo, locations like that in sort of the heart of central Queensland, purchased by southern feedlots to then be trucked back down south. And the money and the rates they're getting is better than the traditional cost of a delivered Downs price less freight, which shows you how strong the demand is from the southerners for feeder cattle and stock in general for that matter. They're operating in those locations chasing slaughter stock as well. Same type of deal, Waden delivered Blackall, Tambo, Winton to then be trucked well into, you know, into the south of the country. I think it just shows how strong that influence is. And when your traditional northern lot feeders have got to compete with that demand, it does make for, you know, for upward pressure on price, because there's obviously only a finite amount of supply. I'm not necessarily saying supply is short, but the added competition is a big contributor in that market to why you're seeing high rates. And add on top of that the fact that the producer has had such a good season generally, north of Dubbo, they've got the luxury and the capability to sit on their hands and wait another week to see where the market goes in the anticipation that it's going to get stronger. I think the other aspect to the feedlot market at present, you know, the growth and the astronomical expansion in capacity and numbers on feed, which ultimately translates to turn off, but the numbers or the availability of pen space to start hasn't been matched by the same growth in processing capacity, or at least certainly not to the same extent. And when we consider, you know, how feedlots have got to deal with situations where the market's rallying, you know, in their face, they can't forgo the kill slots that they have available to them, or that they have on their books for the processes they work with. If they were to do that and forgo or forgive those kill space slots to another feedlot, they'd lose them and not get them back because of how competitive it is to get kill space at the minute. I will touch on it later, but for example, in Queensland's Q2 kill numbers were operating, you know, in the top 10 to 12% of quarters in the last 10 years, which gives you an idea of how strong current kill rates are in that state. But it shows you how competitive it is to get space, which means the feeders can't forgo the, you know, forgo their slots by reducing numbers because they won't get that space back. That's in a nutshell, although it's complex, you know, what's really driving the feeder space. But I think, you know, there's a myriad of factors influencing it at the minute. And I haven't really even spoken on the fact that your traditional Angus feedlots are now well and truly embedded in the crossbred market, which just adds another layer of competition. And that competition in the face of producers sitting on their hands with all the other factors to sell is really the hallmark of why this year has been so strong in the feeders, particularly through winter. It's not unsurprising to see it lift through winter, but it's a pretty complex dynamic as to why it's done what it's done. And the last week or two has given me a fair bit of clarity on that. And until you see a substantial change, which could be a number of things to bring that on, and I don't know what that change is, but until you see something change, there's no reason why this can't continue in the short term. What will shift it is availability of supply, but not to the extent we probably think, particularly, you know, in the sense that the southerners are going to be hanging around for some time, and it's looking unlikely that they're going to have a lot of cattle available to them, obviously, you know, for the next 6 months, particularly if spring gets going. So there's a fair bit in that situation, but Moving beyond the feeders and restockers, I think the cows are worth talking about, or your sort of manufacturing grade animals, particularly the cows have picked up in the last sort of 10 days, I suppose it'd be fair to say, since Monday last week. And, you know, what's sort of turned the cow market around from its, you know, its decline or softening from its peak there earlier has been sort of what you would say the exporters and processors coming to terms with what the imported US market looks like, which has started to strengthen a little now. It's not rallied substantially for imported manufacturing beef, but it has started to firm up a little bit. And what that's allowed the processors to do is they organise forward bookings, which isn't necessarily happening in a really extensive nature just yet because of the continued uncertainty. But what it's allowed them to do is step back into the spot market, which is what they're doing, and start to put a bit more pressure on the cow prices. They all come to terms with where the imported American market's sitting. And that's why you've started to see a lift in the cow price over the last week to 10 days, which tells me from my view, I think we've still got another rally to see in the cows yet this year, particularly if we are going to see the southern supply dry right up. In terms of cows, that is, because producers choose to retain numbers for a rebuild. I certainly think you'll see a bit of that play out regardless across the south as producers, you know, prefer to retain the stock they have than have to go and spend exorbitant amounts of money on restocking out of the open market. And I think that influence, among others, will contribute to seeing another rally in the cow market before the year's out. Moving beyond the current, you know, dynamics and looking at a bit bigger macro level and those two data sets that I mentioned, which have been released in the last 10 days, the quarter two ABS slaughter and production numbers and the Q2 MLA alpha feedlot brief. These give us a really good overview on how the first half of 25 collectively has performed and, you know, gives us some really solid insights on how the industry is tracking across, obviously, the feedlot and processing space, which are, you know, which are so important. But I think it's worth noting about the ABS slaughter and production figures. For those of you that weren't aware, they haven't always been released quarterly. And when they are released, it's typically, you know, 6 to 8 weeks after the quarter. So in this case, June, the June quarter's ended. Put another way, we're over halfway into quarter three and we're just getting the quarter two numbers. But prior to COVID, the results or these figures were actually released on a monthly basis, which aligned with your beef export data and the live cattle export data or live livestock export data from the Department of Agriculture. So COVID was blamed initially, but we've never seen a shift back to the monthly figures. For the sector, looking at data that's now nearly 8 weeks old, it makes it very difficult to remain informed and up to date with how things are actually tracking across the industry. And, you know, it's nearly reasonable to say with this ABS or these ABS numbers, yes, they're excellent because they're mandatorily reported figures, but because they're so outdated, you could nearly render them irrelevant. You know, the sector's moved on from 8 weeks ago. Clearly, like, you've only got to look at the prices as an example. It does point towards a situation where I think as an industry, we need to have a bigger conversation around, you know, this information being reported, but it being so delayed. The monthly data would be much more relevant and timely to keeping the sector up to date. But that aside, the Q2 results and what that data release actually showed, I think, continues to point to production highs in the cycle. Q2 kill numbers at a national level, 2.34 million head. That was the highest since Q2 2015. So we're at decade highs, but the growth year on year, I think, is also quite impressive. So figures are up 215,000 head relative to Q2 24, which is a fairly substantial increase. It's about 10 to 12%, which gives you an idea in the growth of feedlot, of processor capacity over the past 12 months And I think that that's quite a good thing to realize. But when you look at it compared to longer term performance, figures are up 585,000 head on the quarterly average for the past 5 years, or up 22% on the 10-year quarterly average. So we're operating, you know, in those top sort of deciles of longer term average performance, which gives you an indication of the strength of processing throughput at the minute. On a seasonal level, comparing this year or the first half of this year to last year, numbers are in front for sort of H1 25 of last year by nearly 600,000 head or 13%. It gives you a good idea of how significant the increase in kill has been so far this year. And when you look at the data over the longer term, traditionally, the second half of the year is always stronger than the first. So, you know, obviously that's got a lot to do with the lack of public holidays, which just makes working weeks easier for the processors. But that also supports my view of the strengthening in kill. I think we're going to see generally at average levels across the board in the second half of this year, which should push our kill through to, you know, to a figure we haven't seen in nearly 50 years. At a state level, though, Vic was a standout. Quarterly kill numbers at their highest level since 1978. And I think when you look at Victoria's expansion and growth in slaughter throughput in the last probably 2 years, it's a real testament to the expansion processes have invested in their facilities down there over the last couple of years, and also the recovery they've made following COVID and, you know, the implications COVID had on their businesses, particularly that state. It's fairly substantial. It's nearly 50%, the Q2 numbers for Vic, 50% or 177,000 head stronger than the 5-year quarterly average. And, you know, it's fairly impressive, the performance, when you look at it on a chart, considering, you know, the last few years. And expansion's a big part of that. The recovery post-COVID has got a lot to do with it as well. Capacity, I felt, is another one worth talking on. So I looked at the three major states, New South Wales, Vic and Queensland. New South Wales and Vic are operating in the 97th percentiles at a quarterly level of the past decade for quarter two. What that means is only 3% of quarters other than Q2 of 25 in the past decade have been stronger. So it gives you a bit of an idea of the overall capacity and where Q2 sits in that stream as to how much throughput the processors are getting. It's right up there. And you could nearly argue at the 97th percentile, they don't really have any more room to move with, you know, seasonal closures for maintenance and things like that. Queensland, on the other hand, does have a little bit more room. It's at the 88th percentile, which tells you you've got 12% of quarters are a bit stronger than Q2 of this year. But I think overall, what I'm trying to say there is what's concerning about these numbers is we're not in a drought in the major cattle regions of the country, but processors are operating at or near capacity. I think that's something to be cognizant of. And it's a blessing that we've had such a fantastic season north of Dubbo. Obviously, thoughts to go out to those who haven't. But my point is we're at or nearly at capacity in processing throughput, and we're not in a drought in Queensland and the north in general. I think that's something that we need to be cognizant of. Beef exports this year have been red hot. And every month, you know, you've seen figures either close to or at records. And when you look at the Q2 slaughter and production numbers and the production data and what that's telling us, it's a real influential reason it's a fundamental reason as to why we've seen exports so strong. Carcass weights obviously underpin all of that. They have softened a bit on, say, the first quarter of this year. They dropped 6 kilos ahead, but seasonally they were at the same levels, they were 2 kilos stronger compared to Q2 24, which I think is probably, to me, a product of the strength of the season more broadly across the north. But what you know, the strength of those carcass weights in general, they're in line with 5-year averages and a little stronger than 10-year averages. But I think the biggest thing about that is with the strength of the kill throughput, even though carcass weights have declined quarter on quarter, that's driving the strength of production. Production numbers for the first half of this year outperformed what was a record setting last year by 180,000 metric tons or 15%, which gives you an idea of how much extra beef we're producing, you know, in the first 6 months of this year. And it's a massive reason, obviously, why we're seeing exports so strong. So you've seen production numbers up by 15% in the first half of this year, while exports are up 17% or 120,000 tons on the first half of last year. So quite similar in their growth and their comparison to last year. And it's really pleasing to see, obviously, those production numbers are reinforcing the strength of our exports, or at least certainly underpinning it. But to wrap it up, important to touch on the data from the lot feeding brief, which is released by MLA and the Australian Lot Feeders Association. I think, again, you know, this report is not now becoming sort of normal. Every time it comes out, you just see further growth and expansion in obviously the capacity nationally of the feeders, but also, you know, the numbers on feed and subsequently how many cattle we're turning out of feedlots. That will slow, as things always do in cycles. It's not going to go like that forever. But, you know, capacity over 1.7 million or at least nearing it. Numbers on feed at sort of 1.57 million, nearing 1.6 million head. Utilization rates, which is the number of cattle on feed relative to the actual available pen space nationally, is at a record. And subsequently from that is record turnoff at 894,000 head. And that's the one I probably want to focus on, is I've just mentioned record numbers on feed and record capacity, and we've also got record turnoff. So when you sort of strip that back, don't be surprised in the next, you know, 12 to 18 months to see that record turnoff figure of 894,000 head broken again. And I expect it to be broken again because of obviously the increasing number of cattle we've got on feed. The other aspect, I think, which is worth mentioning about this lot feeding brief, and it sort of talks to what I spoke on earlier today about the current market, is, you know, this expansion in feedlot capacity and subsequently, you know, the availability of space feedlots now have for cattle is also an underpinning fundamental driver at a demand level locally for why the cattle market has been so strong in the feeder space this year. Yes, admittedly, the South, you know, is also a real major contributor, but collectively feedlots have all expanded at the same time. And by all expanding at the same time, they've now all got that extra space, which is more demand, you know, to step into the market and purchase stock. And I think that's a major influence, which I've really noticed in the last probably 8 weeks to 12 weeks. We've seen that influence of the feedlots and that demand really strengthen because they've got that availability of space. That's all for this week. But next time, we're going to get a producer on who I'm really looking forward to having a chat to run through how their year's been, how the market's looking from their perspective, and what they're seeing. So that's all from me this week. If today's episode or any others have raised any questions, reach out, send me an email to ripley.atkinson@stonex.com or record a voice memo of yourself, where you're from, send it to me and I'll address it in the next episode. Feel free to share this with any of your mates or anyone you feel who might be interested, or jump on to the listening platform you listen to it and give us a review. It helps others find us and find these episodes. But until next time, thanks for listening. Take care. We'll see you then. Cheers.